The main problem of the European Union is that there is no legal base for minorities or minority languages or lesser used languages or regional languages. So we don't really have anything to fall back on and defend and say that you have to follow these rules. There are no rules in the European Union. The European Union clearly states that minorities or minority rights, if they would exist, and language policy is a competence, like culture and education, is a competence of the member states. So they have an exclusive right on it, and the European Union has no means whatsoever to intervene. I'm going to stick to my 8 minutes, so I make it very short. And just to say that everyone thought that the Lisbon Treaty would be an improvement when it came on the 1st of December 2009, it entered into force, because its Article 1A says that the Union is founded on values of respect for human dignity, freedom, democracy, equality, the rule of law, respect of human rights, including the rights of persons belonging to minorities, which sounds quite good, doesn't it? And with the Lisbon Treaty, the Charter of Fundamental Rights, which Gunnar just mentioned, enters into force. And here are also the two articles that you worked very hard to get introduced, and it was, I heard also from other sources about your hard work there, where even Giscard d'Estaing threatened to walk out because the negotiations got that harsh. But it was very, let's say, a big success that they are there. Article 21 says any discrimination based on any grounds such as sex, race, color, ethnic or social origin, genetic features, language, religion or belief, political or any other opinion, membership of a national minority, property, birth, disability, age or sexual orientation shall be prohibited. And then the following, the one Gunnar mentioned, Article 22, that the Union shall respect cultural, religious and linguistic diversity. This all sounds very good, but then comes the problem, because the scope of the Charter is strictly limited to EU law, because Article 51 in the same Charter takes back everything these two articles already stressed. Because it says, with due regard for the principle of subsidiarity, that's what the Union always blames on. It hides behind the principle of subsidiarity. The Charter is applicable to the member states only when they are implementing Union law. They shall therefore respect the rights in accordance with their respective power, meaning that the European Union doesn't have any power on this or any competence. It's all the member states, or in some cases regions, when the member states delegate them to regions. Furthermore, the Charter does not establish any new power or task for the community or union, or modify the powers and tasks that are defined by the treaties. So what it basically says is that Articles 21 and 22 are good in principle, but it really doesn't give the European Union any instrument to intervene in any way on when it comes to minority rights. It underlines that language policy is a competence of member states, and that means that there's nothing even close to a legal base, unfortunately. Coming back to the Council of Europe, when I worked in the cabinet of the first commissioner that was only responsible for multilingualism, before that, multilingualism belonged to the portfolio of culture and education, first to Viviane Reding, who was commissioner for culture, education and multilingualism, then Jan Fiegel, who was commissioner for for education, culture, sport and multilingualism, and then Orban 3 years uniquely for multilingualism. Many commissioners comes every week with a proposal for a directive or a communication. We had in 3 years only one communication on multilingualism. But in that, we stressed that the Council of Europe's European Charter for Regional or Minority Language provides a comprehensive framework. We wanted to say that it should be the rule, but we couldn't because in the College of Commissioners, you take, at that time, we never voted, or the College never voted during those 3 years. So everything is done by unanimity, and everyone has to agree on everything. So it's the common, or the lowest common denominator that decides. And that means that we only managed to get into the text that it provides a comprehensive framework. So what can then the European Union do? After what I said now, you think that nothing at all, because we don't have any means. But there are, we have two ways of influencing the situation of minorities. One is statements by our commissioners, by the members of the European Parliament. For instance, regarding the Slovak language law, they wanted to limit the use of Hungarian with the Slovak authorities. We managed them to, or I think at least that they modified it thanks to the pressure that came from the European Union. Same with the Turkish news broadcast in Bulgaria that the government wanted to abolish. When it comes to, we were speaking about, or someone mentioned enlargement earlier, it has improved the Kurdish rights in Turkey in the enlargement negotiations. And I think the most important means of the European Union is the financial support through funding programs. It's not only is it vital for the survival of minority language schools or organizations, but it also has a very important political role. It's a means of pressure. And I made a survey, or we made a study on this in 2002 together with François Grain, Tom Mooring, Dirk Horter, Donald O'Regan and Mikkel Strubel, that was called Support for Minority Languages in Europe, where we went through all the funding projects and noticed that only 1% of them enhance the desire, capacity and opportunity to speak regional minority languages. But it was still a question about 6 million euro. So for many schools, it's an important tool. We made a follow-up study in 2006, 10 years of EU support for regional and minority languages, a financial assessment, which showed that the financial support available has increased, and it increased up till 2010. But then this mainstream approach hit in. It was mentioned before that minority languages, I think it was Petra who said that minorities are still considered a problem, and that's also the case in the European Union. Minority languages are still seen as very far from the mainstream, and these new funding programs that are fewer but bigger and require bigger sums of co-funding makes it very hard for regional and minority languages to receive funding. Minority language organizations are normally small, which makes it difficult to compete with the majority languages for the same money. We had 3 weeks ago, Svenska Kulturfonden organized a conference in Brussels on the Creative Europe program, on funding for theaters, for the arts, and for literature. And it became clear at the conference that small theaters, Swedish theaters in Finland, or Welsh theaters, or German theaters in Trentino Alto Adige, or say Slovene theaters in Carinthia, cannot compete on the same. They're not on the same with the same possibilities as, like, say, La Scala in Milan or the National Theatre in London, or the same with small editorial and publishing houses that publishes in regional and minority languages. They cannot compete with Routledge or with Springer Verlag or these big publishing houses. So, and in previous EU programs, priority was given to smaller or less widely spoken languages. But not only has this positive discrimination disappeared that was in the previous generation of programs, but in the new generation of programs, they focus on the big languages. Erasmus Plus stresses the six biggest languages, Creative Europe, the four biggest languages, and many of the new programs are limited to the 24 official languages. Yeah, I think if we achieved anything with Commissioner Orban, it was to open up all funding programs for all languages, no matter the status of the language, even languages that are not recognized, such as Aromanian in Greece or Breton in France, that do not have any official recognition. So what is the reason for this vanishing EU support for minority languages? I would say a lack of cooperation. I gave this speech also at another conference in the European Parliament a month ago, so I focused a bit on what the Parliament can do. That the Committee on Culture and Education is very popular, but for other reasons, not for the fact that language policy is decided upon there, but many are there because of film festivals and so on. And that's where in the European Parliament it's mainly a language issue more than a right issue, since there's no legal base. We have to promote the languages as such. We cannot speak about rights. The member states are becoming more important. You see that also in Juncker's speech, in his inaugural speech in the European Parliament on the 22nd of October. I think he mentioned the member states 10 or 12 times. For the first time, he didn't mention the regions. In the 90s, we spoke about Europe of the regions. Now it's because of this crisis, and we mentioned before also the rise of nationalism. I think for the first time, we're not going forward in the integration of the European Union, but taking a step back to the member states. All governments in the Council are equally negative. When the Council came with their response to our communication on multilingualism, they didn't mention multilingualism, linguistic diversity, or any other languages than they stressed then the 23 official languages at that time. So they are always the, let's say, of the three main institutions, the Commission, Council, and the Parliament, is the Council by far the most negative. And there the decisions are taken according to the lowest common denominator. In international diplomacy, it's not popular to criticize other states. I mentioned this tendency of devolving back power to the member states, and the European Parliament does not use the tools at its disposal because this is also a recent tendency. I have a good friend from the Åland Islands, Mats Löfström, who is an assistant, and I've been feeding him information when the different proposals come up in the committee, in the Education and Culture Committee. He works for MEP Nils Torvalds, and he has been trying hard through lobbying to insert amendments into the different proposal mentioning at least linguistic diversity. But they have all been rejected, and the European Parliament has been deleting every reference to linguistic diversity or multilingualism in the proposals that come from the Commission. And as a result, I'm afraid that in the future there will be hardly any funding for promoting regional and minority languages. The European Parliament would have a great possibility to do something in this field, because the Maastricht Treaty, Article 192, gave the European Parliament an equivalent right to initiate legislation. I don't know if you know how the legislation in the European Union works, but normally it's always the Commission who initiates legislation, and then the decision is taken. It's a co-decisive procedure where the Council and the Parliament then takes the co-legislators and take the decision on it, but it's drafted by the Commission. But in 1992, the Maastricht Treaty gave this right to the European Parliament, which can request by an absolute majority of its members that the Commission, and here I quote the Maastricht Treaty, submits any appropriate proposal on matters on which it considers that a community act is required for the purpose of implementing this treaty. And since the Maastricht Treaty came into force, only 37 legislative initiative reports have been adopted by the European Parliament. There's been hundreds of non-legislative own initiative reports, but only 37 own initiative legislative reports. And one of them in 2003, the EBNA report, is on regional minority languages. Michael Ebner, in his book, thanks Astrid Thors very much for her help in passing this report. Because the regular own initiative reports have no legal value whatsoever, but this has, so in principle it would force the Commission. It asks for a commissioner on multilingualism, it asks for an agency, a European agency for regional minority languages, and other things that the Commission has not implemented. But now in the same opening statement of Jean-Claude Juncker that I referred to earlier, he says that this commission is very much devoted to the strict implementation of the framework agreement regarding follow-up on EP legislative own initiative reports. The European Parliament has also a Director General dealing with commission follow-up of European Parliament initiative. So this is a unique opportunity for the European Parliament to have a bigger role and to have an influence on the legislation. I think I have to stop here. I already gone over my time, but we can in the debate probably discuss it more. So I see this a bit as a lottery ticket that the European Parliament should try to use better. But thank you very much for the invitation.